Chapter 53. To that in this, she did not quite succeed, for it is very difficult to resist confidence, and she knew she had Georgina's. Nothing more was said between the happy pair. Perhaps conspirators who have once established an understanding may not be overfond of repeating the terms and objects of their conspiracy. Next day came Georgina, and came Fledgeby. Georgina had by this time seen a good deal of the house and its frequenters. As there was a certain handsome room with a billiard table in it on the ground floor, eating out a backyard which might have been Mr. Lammle's office, or library, but was called by neither name, but simply Mr. Lammle's room, so it would have been hard for stronger female heads than Georgina's to determine whether its frequenters were men of pleasure or men of business. Between the room and the men there were strong points of general resemblance. Both were too gaudy, too slangy, too odorous of cigars, and too much given to horseflesh, the latter characteristic being exemplified in the room by its decorations, and in the men by their conversation. High-stepping horses seemed necessary to all Mr. Lammle's friends as necessary as their transaction of business together in a gypsy way at untimely hours of the morning and evening, and in rushes and snatches. There were friends who seemed to be always coming and going across the channel, on errands about the Bourse, and Greek and Spanish and India and Mexican and par and premium and discount, and 3/4 and 7/8. There were other friends who seemed to be always lolling and lounging in, and out of the city, on questions of the Bourse, and Greek and Spanish and India and Mexican and par and premium and discount, and 3/4 and 7/8. They were all feverish, boastful, and indefinably loose, and they all ate and drank a great deal, and made bets in eating and drinking. They all spoke of sums of money, and only mentioned the sums and left the money to be understood as 5,000 and 40,000 tom, apostrophe or 222 on every individual share in the lot Joe. Apostrophe they seemed to divide the world into two classes of people. People who were making enormous fortunes, and people who were being enormously ruined. They were always in a hurry, and yet seemed to have nothing tangible to do, except a few of them, these, mostly asthmatic and thick-lipped, who were forever demonstrating to the rest, with gold pencil cases which they could hardly hold, because of the big rings on their forefingers, how money was to be made. Lastly, they all swore at their grooms, and the grooms were not quite as respectful or complete as other men's grooms, seeming somehow to fall short of the groom point as their masters fell short of the gentleman point. Young Fledgeby was none of these. Young Fledgeby had a peachy cheek, or a cheek compounded of the peach, and the red wall on which it grows, and was an awkward, sandy-haired, small-eyed youth. Exceeding slim, his enemies would have said lanky, and prone to self-examination in the articles of whisker and mustache. While feeling for the whisker that he anxiously expected, Fledgeby underwent remarkable fluctuations of spirits, ranging along the whole scale from confidence to despair. There were times when he started, as exclaiming by Jupiter, here it is at last. ... There were other times when, being equally depressed, he would be seen to shake his head, and give up hope. To see him at those periods leaning on a chimney piece, like as on an urn containing the ashes of his ambition, with the cheek, that would not sprout, upon the hand on which that cheek had forced conviction, was a distressing sight. Not so was Fledgeby seen on this occasion. Arrayed in superb raiment, with his opera hat under his arm, he concluded his self-examination hopefully, awaited the arrival of Miss Podsnap, and talked small talk with Mrs. Lammle. In facetious homage to the smallness of his talk, and the jerky nature of his manners, Fledgeby's familiars had agreed to confer upon him behind his back the honorary title of Fascination Fledgeby. Warm weather, Mrs. Lammle, apostrophe said Fascination Fledgeby. Mrs. Lammle thought it scarcely as warm as it had been yesterday. Perhaps not, apostrophe said Fascination Fledgeby, with great quickness of repartee, but I expect it will be devilish warm tomorrow. Apostrophe, he threw off another little scintillation. Been out today, Mrs. Lammel? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mrs. Lammel answered, for a short drive. Some people, apostrophe said Fascination Fletcherby, are accustomed to take long drives, but it generally appears to me that, if they make them too long, they overdo it. Apostrophe, being in such feather, he might have surpassed himself in his next sally, had not Miss Podsnap been announced. Mrs. Lammel flew to embrace her darling little Georgie, and when the first transports were over, presented Mr. Fletcherby. Mr. Lammel came on the scene last, for he was always late, and so were the frequenters always late, all hands being bound to be made late, by private information about the bourse, and Greek and Spanish and India and Mexican and par and premium and discount, and 3/4 and 7/8. A handsome little dinner was served immediately, and Mr. Lammel sat sparkling at his end of the table, with his servant behind his chair, and his ever-lingering doubts upon the subject of his wages behind himself. Mr. Lammel's utmost powers of sparkling were in requisition today, for Fascination Fletcherby and Georgina not only struck each other speechless, but struck each other in two astonishing attitudes. Georgina, as she sat facing Fletcherby, making such efforts to conceal her elbows as were totally incompatible with the use of a knife and fork, and Fletcherby, as he sat facing Georgina, avoiding her countenance by every possible device, and betraying the discomposure of his mind in feeling for his whiskers with his spoon, his wine glass, and his bread. So, Mr. and Mrs. Alfred Lammel had to prompt, and this is how they prompted. Georgina, apostrophe said Mr. Lammel, low and smiling, and sparkling all over, like a harlequin. You are not in your usual spirits. Why are you not in your usual spirits, Georgina? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Georgina faltered, that she was much the same as she was in general. She was not aware of being different. Not aware of being different. Apostrophe, apostrophe, retorted Mr. Alfred Lammel. You, my dear Georgina, who are always so natural and unconstrained with us, who are such a relief from the crowd that are all alike, who are the embodiment of gentleness, simplicity, and reality. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Miss Podsnap looked at the door, as if she entertained confused thoughts of taking refuge from these compliments in flight. Now, I will be judged, apostrophe said Mr. Lammel, raising his voice a little, by my friend Fletcherby. Apostrophe, oh don't. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Miss Podsnap faintly ejaculated. When Mrs. Lammel took the prompt book, I beg your pardon, Alfred, my dear, but I cannot part with Mr. Fletcherby quite yet. You must wait for him a moment. Mr. Fletcherby and I are engaged in a personal discussion. Apostrophe, Fletcherby must have conducted it on his side with immense art, for no appearance of uttering one syllable had escaped him. A personal discussion, Sophronia, my love? What discussion? Fletcherby, I am jealous. What discussion, Fletcherby? Apostrophe, shall I tell him, Mr. Fletcherby? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Mrs. Lammel. Trying to look as if he knew anything about it, Fascination replied, yes, tell him. Apostrophe, we were discussing then, apostrophe said Mrs. Lammel, if you must know, Alfred, whether Mr. Fletcherby was in his usual flow of spirits. Apostrophe, why, that is the very point, Sophronia, that Georgina and I were discussing as to herself. What did Fletcherby say? Apostrophe, oh, a likely thing, sir, that I am going to tell you everything, and be told nothing. What did Georgina say? Apostrophe, Georgina said she was doing her usual justice to herself today, and I said she was not. Apostrophe, precisely, apostrophe exclaimed Mrs. Lammel, what I said to Mr. Fletcherby. Apostrophe still, it wouldn't do. They would not look at one another. No, not even when the sparkling host proposed that the quartet should take an appropriately sparkling glass of wine. Georgina looked from her wine glass at Mr. Lammel, and at Mrs. Lammel, but mightn't, couldn't, shouldn't, wouldn't, look at Mr. Fletcherby. Fascination looked from his wine glass at Mrs. Lammel, and at Mr. Lammel, but mightn't, couldn't, shouldn't, wouldn't, look at Georgina. More prompting was necessary. Cupid must be brought up to the mark. The manager had put him down in the bill for the part, and he must play it. Sophronia, my dear, apostrophe said Mr. Lammel, I don't like the color of your dress. Apostrophe, I appeal, apostrophe said Mrs. Lammel, to Mr. Fletcherby. Apostrophe, and I, apostrophe said Mr. Lammel, to Georgina. Apostrophe, Georgie, my love, apostrophe remarked Mrs. Lammel aside to her dear girl, I rely upon you, not to go over to the opposition. Now, Mr. Fletcherby. Apostrophe, fascination wished to know, if the color were not called rose color? Yes, said Mr. Lammel, actually he knew everything, it was really rose color. Fascination took rose color to mean the color of roses. In this he was very warmly supported by Mr. and Mrs. Lammel. Fascination had heard the term queen of flowers applied to the rose. Similarly, it might be said, that the dress was the queen of dresses. Very happy, Fletcherby. Apostrophe from Mr. Lammel. Notwithstanding, Fascination's opinion was that we all had our eyes, or at least a large majority of us, and that and his farther opinion was several ands, with nothing beyond them. Oh, Mr. Fletcherby, apostrophe said Mrs. Lammel, to desert me in that way. Oh, Mr. Fletcherby, to abandon my poor dear injured rose, and declare for blue. Apostrophe, apostrophe, victory, victory. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Lammel, your dress is condemned, my dear. Apostrophe, but what, apostrophe said Mrs. Lammel, stealing her affectionate hand towards her dear girls, what does Georgie say? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she says, apostrophe replied Mr. Lammel, interpreting for her, that in her eyes you look well in any color, Sophronia, and that if she had expected to be embarrassed by so pretty a compliment as she has received, she would have worn another color herself. Though I tell her, in reply, that it would not have saved her, for whatever color she had worn would have been Fletcherby's color. But what does Fletcherby say? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he says, apostrophe replied Mrs. Lammel, interpreting for him, and patting the back of her dear girl's hand, as if it were Fletcherby who was patting it, that it was no compliment, but a little natural act of homage, that he couldn't resist. And, apostrophe expressing more feeling as if it were more feeling on the part of Fletcherby, he is right, he is right. Apostrophe, apostrophe, still, no, not even now, would they look at one another. Seeming to gnash his sparkling teeth, studs, eyes, and buttons, all at once, Mr. Lammel secretly bent a dark frown on the two, expressive of an intense desire to bring them together, by knocking their heads together. Have you heard this opera of tonight, Fletcherby? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he asked, stopping very short, to prevent himself from running on and to confound you. Apostrophe, why no, not exactly, apostrophe said Fletcherby. In fact I don't know a note of it. Apostrophe, neither do you know it, Georgie? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mrs. Lammel. And no, apostrophe replied Georgina, faintly, under the sympathetic coincidence. Why then, apostrophe said Mrs. Lammel, charmed by the discovery which flowed from the premises, you neither of you know it. How charming. Apostrophe, apostrophe, even the craven Fletcherby felt that the time was now come when he must strike a blow. He struck it by saying, partly to Mrs. Lammel and partly to the circumambient air, I consider myself very fortunate in being reserved by apostrophe, as he stopped dead, Mr. Lammel, making that dangerous bush of his whiskers to look out of, offered him the word destiny. Apostrophe, no, I wasn't going to say that, apostrophe said Fletcherby. I was going to say fate. I consider it very fortunate, that fate is written in the book which is its own property, that I should go to that opera for the first time under the memorable circumstances of going with Miss Podsnap. Apostrophe, to which Georgina replied, hooking her two little fingers in one another and addressing the tablecloth. Thank you, but I generally go with no one but you, Sophronia, and I like that very much. Apostrophe, content perforce with this success for the time. Mr. Lammel let Miss Podsnap out of the room, as if he were opening her cage door, and Mrs. Lammel followed. Coffee being presently served upstairs, he kept a watch on Fledgeby until Miss Podsnap's cup was empty, and then directed him with his finger, as if that young gentleman were a slow retriever, to go and fetch it. This feat he performed, not only without failure, but even with the original embellishment of informing Miss Podsnap that green tea was considered bad for the nerves. Though there Miss Podsnap unintentionally threw him out by faltering, "Oh, is it indeed? How does it act?" ... which he was not prepared to elucidate. The carriage announced, Mrs. Lammel said. "Don't mind me, Mr. Fledgeby, my skirts and cloak occupy both my hands. Take Miss Podsnap." ... And he took her, and Mrs. Lammel went next, and Mr. Lammel went last, savagely following his little flock, like a drover. But he was all sparkle and glitter in the box at the opera, and there he and his dear wife made a conversation between Fledgeby and Georgina in the following ingenious and skillful manner. They sat in this order: Mrs. Lammel, Fascination Fledgeby, Georgina, Mr. Lammel. Mrs. Lammel made leading remarks to Fledgeby, only requiring monosyllabic replies. Mr. Lammel did the like with Georgina. At times Mrs. Lammel would lean forward to address Mr. Lammel to this purpose. "Alfred, my dear," Mr. Fledgeby very justly says, apropos of the last scene, "that true constancy would not require any such stimulant as the stage deems necessary." ... To which Mr. Lammel would reply, "Eh, Sophronia, my love, but as Georgina has observed to me, the lady had no sufficient reason to know the state of the gentleman's affections." ... To which Mrs. Lammel would rejoin, "Very true, Alfred, but Mr. Fledgeby points out, ... this." To which Alfred would demur, "Undoubtedly, Sophronia, but Georgina acutely remarks, ... that." Through this device the two young people conversed at great length, and committed themselves to a variety of delicate sentiments, without having once opened their lips, save to say yes or no, and even that not to one another. Fledgeby took his leave of Miss Podsnap at the carriage door, and... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.